speaker can see to read his notes now. I'll ask our brother Philip to step forward and to speak to us then upon the subject, holiness to Yahweh upon the bells of the horses.
We have seen, brothers and sisters, how the principles of holiness to Yahweh should have permeated the whole of the life of Israel after the flesh. Starting from the forehead of the high priest, it should have spread first of all to the priests and from them to the rest of the nation. And the same applies also to the ecclesia, to spiritual Israel. Holiness is implanted in the forehead of our high priest. Not this time in the form of an engraved plate, but in the very thoughts of his mind. And as the body of Christ, we also should manifest it as well. From the holiness of the Sabbath, it should be the subject of our study and our meditation. And from the gifts and offerings, we have seen that the whole of our lives are devoted to Yahweh. This commenced when the ecclesia was extended in the 50th day, and will find its completion on the antitypical 50th year, the year of Jubilee, when the ecclesia is released from the bondage of sin and death. But we now wish to look at five references in the prophets to our subject. There are only five, so again, we see the emphasis upon grace. We may perhaps be surprised at the context of some of these references. Five references. It is by grace that we are saved, and if we would attain to that grace, we must manifest holiness now. The first reference in the prophets is in Jeremiah chapter 2, where the prophet calls Israel to remember the days of old. This first reference in the prophets isn't so much a consideration of what will happen, but of what should have happened in the past. Jeremiah chapter 2 and verse 1. Moreover, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Go and cry in the ears of Jerusalem, saying, Thus saith Yahweh, I remember thee, the kindness of thy youth, the love of thine espousals, when thou wentest after me in the wilderness, in a land that was not sown. Israel was holiness unto Yahweh, and the first fruits of his increase. All that devour him shall offend, evil shall come upon them, saith Yahweh. Yes, Israel had been called to holiness to Yahweh. They were called to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And at first, the people had responded well. In the book of Exodus, in the 24th chapter, there we read of the initial response of the people. Exodus 24, the third verse. Moses came and told the people all the words of Yahweh and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice and said, All the words which Yahweh hath said will we do. It didn't, of course, last very long. 40 days later, and they were worshipping the golden calf which they had caused Aaron to make. But for that very short period, the people did resolve to live up to their calling. And the elders were shown a vision of the future glory. Verse 9. Then went up Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and they saw the God of Israel. And there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of a sapphire stone, and as it were, the body of heaven in his clearness. Upon the nobles of the children of Israel he laid not his hand. Also they saw God and did eat and drink. We cannot stop now to go into the details of this vision. Suffice it to say that it depicted the time when the kingdom of Israel should be fully established, with all giving glory and holiness to Yahweh, in that age which is yet to come. But from then on, the history of Israel had been a long catalogue of departure from the faith. True, there were brief periods of revival, but in general, the history of Israel was a history of apostasy. with just a few faithful men and women retaining a life of holiness. And so back in Jeremiah chapter 2, the prophet continues. Israel had indeed been holiness to Yahweh in those first few days after they had received the message at the mount. But then he continues, Jeremiah 2 and verse 4. Hear ye the word of Yahweh, O house of Jacob, and all the families of the house of Israel. Thus saith Yahweh, what iniquity have your fathers found in me, that they are gone far from me, and have walked after vanity, and are become vain? Neither said they, where is Yahweh that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, that led us through the wilderness? Through a land of deserts and of pits, through a land of drought and of the shadow of death, through a land that no man passed through and where no man dwelt. I brought you into a plentiful country to eat the fruit thereof and the goodness thereof. But when ye entered, ye defiled my land and made mine heritage an abomination. The priest said not, where is Yahweh? And they that handled the law knew me not. The pastors also transgressed against me, and the prophets prophesied by Baal and walked after things that do not profit. The land was holy, but they defiled it. The priests should have been holy, but they knew not Yahweh. The prophets should have taught holiness, but instead they prophesied by Baal. Nevertheless, Israel would fulfill the purpose for which they had been called. Chapter 3 and verse 14. Turn, O backsliding children, saith Yahweh, for I am married unto you, and I will take you, one of a city and two of a family, and I will bring you to Zion. And I will give you pastors according to mine heart, which shall feed you with knowledge and understanding. And it shall come to pass, when ye be multiplied and increased in the land in those days, saith Yahweh, they shall say no more, the ark of the covenant of Yahweh, neither shall it come to mind, neither shall they remember it, neither shall they visit it, neither shall that be done any more. At that time they shall call Jerusalem the throne of Yahweh, and all the nations shall be gathered unto it, to the name of Yahweh, to Jerusalem, neither shall they walk any more after the imagination of their evil heart. In those days the house of Judah shall walk with the house of Israel, and they shall come together out of the land of the north to the land that I have given for an inheritance unto your fathers. Yet Israel after the flesh, as says the prophet, may do as they please, but the purpose of Yahweh with them shall not be frustrated. However much they have forsaken the covenant in the days of old, God has spoken, and his purpose with them will be fulfilled. And the holiness to which Israel was called will not be confined to Israel after the flesh. For as we saw in verse 17, all nations will be gathered unto it. Those nations that survive the judgments of Yahweh upon the world will themselves be called upon to reflect holiness to Yahweh, as we in these days are called upon to do so. And as we intimated, this phrase occur in the prophets in what we may have thought to be some very unlikely places. The next time is in Isaiah chapter 23. It is that chapter which deals with the burden upon Tyre. And no doubt this chapter had an application to the ancient port of Tyre, but we believe it has a greater application in our days to Britain. In the days of Brother Thomas and Brother Roberts, Britain reached the zenith of its power as a trading nation. It established colonies throughout the world, just as Tyre established colonies and trading partners throughout the ancient world. A map of the world at the end of the last century displayed numerous areas coloured red, depicting territories subject to or dependent upon Britain. But gradually, during the present century, that power has declined, The colonies have become independent. Other nations have appeared to take the economic leadership of the world. And particularly since the Second World War, the prestige of Britain declined. And so many brethren came to the conclusion that Brother Thomas was wrong, that we must look elsewhere for the latter-day Tyre or Tarshish. But this 23rd chapter of Isaiah, brethren and sisters, foretold a decline in the power of Tyre and Tarshish. Verse 14. Howl, ye ships of Tarshish, for your strength is laid waste. And it shall come to pass in that day that Tyre shall be forgotten 70 years, according to the days of one king. After the end of 70 years shall Tyre sing as an harlot. And the power of Britain did indeed begin to decline about the time of the death of Queen Victoria in 1901. But 70 years from then brought us to 1971, and Britain entered the European Economic Community. And it signed the Treaty of Rome. The Treaty of Rome. The Treaty of the Harlot Power. At the end of 70 years shall Tyre sing as an harlot. Verse 16. Take an harp. Go about the city, thou harlot that has been forgotten. Make sweet melody. Sing many songs that thou mayest be remembered. And it shall come to pass after the end of 70 years that Yahweh will visit Tyre, and she shall turn to her hire, and shall commit fornication with all the kingdoms of the world upon the face of the earth. So Britain decided that her prosperity lay in Europe. Well, she's not been too sure about this. It involves too much sacrifice of national sovereignty. And he came up again in Parliament in this last week, hasn't it, concerning certain of the VAT regulations. She's not been a very comfortable member of the EEC. Raised many objections to the rules, demanding to pay less by way of contributions to the funds. And yet, for the moment, her economic policy does seem to prosper. She can't quite make up her mind whether to have a high exchange rate and cheaper imports, or a low one to encourage exports. Can't quite decide whether to have high interest rates to keep down inflation, or a low one to reduce the exchange rate. But nevertheless, she is receiving and apparently prospering from the hire of an harlot. Naval strength not quite so low as many thought either, as we can, was evidence 5 years ago in the Falklands campaign. But notice what is to happen to Tyre's hire. Verse 18. And her merchandise and her hire shall be holiness to Yahweh. It shall not be treasured nor laid up, for her merchandise shall be for them that dwell before Yahweh, to eat sufficiently and for durable clothing. So all that wealth, brethren and sisters, that is gathering in the financial institutions of the City of London is to be holiness to Yahweh. One of the interesting facts about the current economic situation is that the pound has been strengthening against the European currencies. Britain has consistently refused to join the European monetary system, by which her currency would have been pegged to that of the rest of the EEC. And latterly, the Deutschmark and the other European currencies tied to it have tended to become weaker against sterling. The result has been that very large sums from Europe, from the Harlot territory, have been invested in the City of London. Now when that image of Daniel crashes down, brethren and sisters, and all Europe is subdued beneath the heel of Christ and the saints, who will all that money belong to? The lawful owners will have disappeared. And when the English Queen places her crown at the foot of Christ, he will take control of that wealth. Much of it is in the custody of Jews in any case who will be involved in the second Exodus, so they'll take a lot of it there. And so we see how all of this, the hire of the harlot, is to be holiness to Yahweh. And so it is not difficult for us to see this principle, this prophecy here being fulfilled. But what about the last part of that verse? Her merchandise shall be for those that dwell before Yahweh to eat sufficiently and for durable clothing. Who are those referred to that dwell before Yahweh? The saints will of course dwell before Yahweh, but what need will they have of material possessions in that age? Now, the word which is rendered durable, according to Decenius, means genteel, worthy of a well-born and noble person. And it is by no means unreasonable to expect that the saints, as kings and priests of the kingdom age, will be arrayed in garments suitable to their office, so that they may be seen as such by the mortal population. So these will be provided for out of the hire of Tyre. But it's not only the saints who will dwell before Yahweh. Ezekiel chapter 48 describes for us two classes of priests that will be in that age. Ezekiel chapter 48 and verse 9. The oblation that ye shall offer unto Yahweh shall be of 25,000 in length and of 10,000 in breadth. And for them, even for the priests, shall be this holy oblation toward the north 25,000 in length, and toward the west 10,000 in breadth, and toward the east 10,000 in breadth, and toward the south 25,000 in length, and the sanctuary of Yahweh shall be in the midst thereof. It shall be for the priests that are sanctified of the sons of Zadok, which have kept my charge, which went not astray when the children of Israel went astray, as the Levites went astray. And this oblation of the land that is offered shall be unto them a thing most holy by the board of the Levites. So here we have the portion of the land for the sons of Zadok, for the sons of righteousness, for the saints, then become kings and priests. Verse 13. And over against the border of the priests, the Levites shall have 25,000 in length and 10,000 in breadth. All the length shall be 25,000 and the breadth 10,000. And they shall not sell of it, neither exchange nor alienate the first fruits of the land, for it is holiness unto Yahweh. So there will also be the Levites, the natural descendants of Levi, who will also have a role in the temple worship. Not the highest part, for they will not come near to Yahweh. But as we see from chapter 44, they will have certain duties. Chapter 44 and verse 10. And the Levites that are gone away from me, when Israel went astray, which went astray away from me after their idols, they shall even bear their iniquity. Yet they shall be ministers in my sanctuary, having charge at the gates of the house and ministering to the house. They shall slay the burnt offering and the sacrifice for the people, and they shall stand before them to minister unto them, because they ministered unto them before their idols and caused the house of Israel to fall into iniquity. Therefore have I lifted up mine hand against them, saith Adonai Yahweh, and they shall bear their iniquity. And they shall not come near unto me to do the office of a priest unto me, nor to come near to any of my holy things in the most holy place. But they shall bear their shame and their abominations which they have committed. But I will make them keepers of the charge of the house, for all the service thereof, and for all that shall be done therein. And they, of course, will have to eat. And they will also require special garments. All of these things, we suggest, provided by a hire from the city of Tyre. It is a remarkable fact, brothers and sisters, and indeed an encouraging one, as we hear of the financial intrigues of our world, involving sharp practice and sometimes downright fraud, whereby people are trying to amass huge fortunes for themselves, as they think, but in reality they are doing it for us. They themselves will not profit by it. It is all for the glory of the kingdom. Our reference to the Levites in this regard led us to the third prophetic reference to our subject, that portion of the land given to the Levites remember, as we saw in 48th chapter, is holiness unto Yahweh. Now, all the land, of course, is holy. But it is emphasized in this case, and it is expressed in terms similar to that which we saw in Leviticus chapter 27, to describe land which a man might have sanctified under the law. The Levites will not be allowed to sell or exchange their land, nor can he alienate or dispose of the first fruits of the produce of that land. We observe that it is the land that is described as holiness, not the people. The people, the Levites themselves, will have to establish their holiness as we have to do now. As we in this age are called upon to live a life of holiness, if we do, then we shall become holiness in the complete sense when we stand before the judgment seat of Christ. And the land on which we dwell will clearly maintain its holiness in that day. The word does not need to state this fact. It is self-evident, is it not, that the land of the possession of the priests of the sons of Zadok will be holiness. But where the mortals of the nations are concerned, it needs to be emphasized. So in our studies so far, we have considered holiness in the age to come, relating first to national Israel as a whole, then to the wealth of the Gentiles, and now to the land of the Levites. Land which is holy, but which the Levites will have the duty to maintain. Because they are mortal, they could fail in this, and so their duty is there stressed for us. Our fourth reference also has to do with the land of Israel, specifically the city of Jerusalem, and it's in Jeremiah chapter 31. It's that well-known chapter which speaks of the new covenant which Yahweh will make with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, a law which will be written in their hearts. Again, then, the context is Israel after the flesh. Jeremiah 31, verse 38. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that the city shall be built to Yahweh from the tower of Hananel unto the gate of the corner. And the measuring line shall yet go forth over against it upon the hill Gareb, and shall compass about to Goath, and the whole valley of the dead bodies and of the ashes, and all the fields unto the brook of Kidron, unto the corner of the horse gate toward the east, shall be holiness unto Yahweh. It shall not be plucked up, nor thrown down, any more, forever. Now clearly the whole of the city area is holy. Ezekiel was specifically told that it was. But from the description of Jeremiah, the expression holiness to Yahweh is used only of a portion of it. The whole valley of the dead bodies or carcasses and of the ashes and all the fields unto the brook of Kidron unto the corner of the horse gate toward the east shall be holiness to Yahweh. Strange things we might think to have holiness associated with them. But what is being stressed is those parts that had not previously been holy. Now the valley of the carcasses was of course the valley of Hinnom. This was the place where the city's refuse was burned, the place described by Jesus as Gehenna. But it had a much worse use than that. Jeremiah chapter 7 describes some of the worst excesses of the children of Israel when their priests forgot what was written upon their foreheads. Jeremiah chapter 7 and verse 31. They have built the high places of Tophet, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, which I commanded them not, neither came it into my heart. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that it shall no more be called Tophet, nor the valley of the son of Hinnom, but the valley of slaughter. For they shall bury in Tophet till there be no place, and the carcasses of this people shall be meat for the fowls of the heaven and for the beasts of the earth, and none shall fray them away. It was here that they burnt their sons and daughters in sacrifice to Moloch. Hence the word ashes in Jeremiah 31, and the word which is translated ashes in that verse refers specifically to the ashes of sacrificial offerings. It is used in the law in relation to the ashes of the burnt offerings. But here it is the ashes of the children burnt to Moloch. This is described, this area described, as being holiness to Yahweh. In that passage in Jeremiah 31, it also included the horse gate. And this gate is only mentioned on two other occasions. Once in Nehemiah chapter 3 regarding the reconstruction of the wall after the return from exile, and once in the second book of Chronicles chapter 23. We'll have a look at that incident. Second book of Chronicles chapter 23. It is the end of the reign in Judah of the wicked queen Athaliah, daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. Now Joash, remember, had been rescued from her hand by his sister, and now he was proclaimed king by Jehoiada the high priest. A high priest who did remember what was written upon his forehead. 2 Kings 23, verse 11. Then they brought out the king's son and put him upon the crown and gave him the testimony and made him king. And Jehoiada and his sons anointed him and said, God save the king. Now when Athaliah heard the noise of the people running and praising the king, she came to the people into the house of Yahweh, and she looked, and behold, the king stood at the pillar at the entering in, and the princes and the trumpets by the king. And all the people of the land rejoiced and sounded with trumpets, also the singers with instruments of music, and such as taught to sing praise. Then Athaliah rent her clothes and said, treason, treason. And Jehoiada the priest brought out the captains of hundreds that were set over the host, and said unto them, have her forth of the ranges, and whoso followeth her, let him be slain with the sword. For the priest said, slay her not in the house of Yahweh. So they laid hands on her. And when she was come to the entering of the horse gate by the king's house, they slew her there. So here was a further reason for defilement of the area, the place where Athaliah, that evil queen, was slain. And all of this is described as being within the area of Jerusalem, which is holiness unto Yahweh in the kingdom age. All of it is within the area of the temple described by Ezekiel. From the data given in Jeremiah chapter 31, Brother Sully has plotted the site of the temple. And most of this area, described as holiness to Yahweh, is within the inner sanctuary, surrounding the altar. Not the outer court, within the inner sanctuary. So what a great cleansing there has to take place, brethren and sisters. Wealth arising from the evil works of man, much of which indeed could have originated from the Vatican. Land which has witnessed the worst deeds of Israel after the flesh. All of it cleansed and purified and become holiness to Yahweh in the age to come. And yet, in Isaiah chapter 66, there is to remain a valley of carcasses. Last words of the prophecy of Isaiah. Chapter 66, verse 23. It shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith Yahweh. And they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me, for their worm shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched, and they shall be an abhorring unto all flesh. From the fact that Jesus quotes this verse and calls it Gehenna, I had always assumed that it would have been in the valley of Hinnom. And yet quite clearly that cannot be so. Clearly there must be a different site which will be chosen in the kingdom age for that purpose. In Jeremiah 31, to which we already referred, there was a horse gate. And in the passage which we have, in our final passage rather, from which our subject is taken, we have a further reference to horses. And so it would be profitable to briefly consider the scriptural use of the horse. And the earliest reference in scripture to a horse is in connection with Egypt. From very early days, the Egyptians made great use of the horse in warfare. No doubt we are all well aware of the vivid description of the horse in the book of Job, the horse eager to enter into the battle. The horse is also mentioned in scripture as a source of confidence on the part of man. Just as a modern army will gain confidence if it has a large number of tanks, so up indeed to the early part of this century, they put their confidence in horses. In Deuteronomy chapter 17, the kings of Israel were commanded to be different from the nations around them in this respect. Deuteronomy 17, verse 16. King over Israel, but he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to the end that he should multiply horses. For as much as Yahweh hath said unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way. Now the strength of Israel was in Yahweh. That was where they should have placed their confidence. And to get horses, they would have to have gone to Egypt. And they were forbidden to do so. But Solomon, remember, did multiply horses to himself. And he did indeed get them from Egypt, which was one of the causes of his downfall. But going now to Zechariah chapter 14, we read that in the kingdom age, horses also become the subject of holiness. The 14th chapter begins with the deliverance of Jerusalem through Christ and the saints. Then we have the direction to the nations, to the mortal nations, to come and worship in Jerusalem once a year. And finally, this provision of holiness. Verse 20. In that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses holiness unto Yahweh, and the pots in Yahweh's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. And we ask, why the bells of the horses? What's so special about those? Now the word which is here translated bell is only found on this one occasion. Nothing like the word used for the bells of the high priest's garments. The word literally means a tinkler. The idea behind it appears to be something that vibrates, thus giving off a tinkling sound. And the root word from which it is derived is translated tingle, as for example in Jeremiah chapter 19 and the third verse. Jeremiah chapter 19 and verse 3. And say, hear ye the word of Yahweh, O kings of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring evil upon this place, the which whosoever heareth, his ears shall tingle. It's not the fear, but the tingling in the ears, used in a metaphorical sense in this case, which is the connection with the word bell we are considering. We've all, no doubt, sometime or other, had the experience of some sudden noise close at hand, which vibrates in our ears for a minute or two afterwards with a tingling sound. Some people, indeed, have an affliction of the ear which causes them to constantly hear a ringing in the ears. Now, in ancient times, it was the custom to decorate the harness of a horse, or indeed of a camel, with small pieces of metal which gave off a tinkling sound as they moved. No doubt This is why the translators give the marginal alternative in Zechariah chapter 14 verse 20 as bridles. But it's not, in fact, the bridles so much as the ornaments upon the bridles that is referred to. In the book of Judges, in the 8th chapter, we have a reference to these ornaments at the end of the wars of Gideon against the Midianites. Judges chapter 8 and verse 21. Then Zeba and Zalmunna said, "Rise thou and fall upon us, for as the man is, so is his strength." And Gideon arose and slew Zeba and Zalmunna and took away the ornaments that were on their camels' necks. The same sort of thing as referred to in Zechariah 14. Why, we may ask, did Gideon take away these ornaments? Surely there was much wealth for Zeba and Zalmunna and the Midianites. Why is this singled out? We believe there were two reasons. First of all, no doubt, the sound of approaching cavalry, which was being a bit either camels or horses, wearing these tinkling ornaments, would strike fear into an enemy, which is why the root word is used to describe fear. But the word also has a more sinister use, and that is that these objects were associated with pagan worship. Regrettably, Gideon, despite the fact that he had defeated Midian with the help of Yahweh, later turned himself to the pagan gods. Verse 24. Gideon said unto them, "I would desire a request of you, that ye would give me every man the earrings of his prey." For they had golden earrings, because they were Ishmaelites. And they answered, "We will willingly give them." And they spread a garment, and did cast therein every man the earrings of his prey. And the weight of the golden earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, beside ornaments and collars and purple raiment that was on the kings of Midian, and beside the chains that were about their camels' necks. And so these ornaments then, which were taken from Zeba and Zalmunna, were used to forge this god which Gideon afterwards worshipped. But the word which is here translated ornament in these two verses is found on just one other occasion. And this is in Isaiah chapter 3, and it describes the idolatry of the daughters of Zion. Isaiah chapter 3, verse 16. Moreover, Yahweh said, "Because the daughters of Zion are haughty, and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go, and making a tinkling with their feet, therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and Yahweh will discover their secret parts. In that day the Lord will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments about their feet, and their cauls, and their round tires like the moon." And it's the expression, "round tires like the moon," which is from the same Hebrew word translated ornament in Judges chapter 8. And so presumably these objects were particularly associated with the worship of the moon goddess. And yet even these are to be holiness to Yahweh in the kingdom age. What a change there must be, brethren and sisters, in the age to come. The tribe of Levi, which had gone astray, the wealth of the nations involving the apostasy, the means of man's warfare, even the things used in his idolatrous worship, all of them are stressed as to become holiness to Yahweh in the age to come. It's like the gold and silver from Jericho, is it not? That no doubt had also been used in Jericho in the worship of their gods, but it was devoted to Yahweh, Joshua was specifically instructed. Such then is the cleansing power of Yahweh through Christ and his saints, and all these things which have been used so abominably in the history of the world are to become holiness unto Yahweh. And Zechariah, of course, does portray the horse used in the service of Yahweh, does he not? If we go to the first chapter of Zechariah, verse 7. Upon the 24th day of the 11th month, which is the month Sebat, in the second year of Darius, came the word of Yahweh unto Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo, the prophet, saying, I saw by night, and behold, a man riding upon a red horse, and he stood among the myrtle trees that were in the bottom. And behind him there were red horses, speckled and white. Then said I, O my Lord, what are these? And the angel that talked with me said unto me, I will show thee what these be. And the man that stood among the myrtle trees answered and said, These are they whom Yahweh hath sent to walk to and fro through the earth. And they answered the angel of Yahweh that stood among the myrtle trees and said, We have walked to and fro through the earth, and behold, all the earth sitteth still and is at rest. And also in the 5th chapter, again, we get references to the horses becoming between the two mountains. In the Apocalypse also, in the 19th chapter, we have there the saints riding upon horses. And so these animals, which were forbidden to Israel after the flesh, are to be purified and used in the service of Yahweh in the age to come. The horse, purged of its association with man, now used in the work of Yahweh to purge the earth of its wickedness. And its tinkling ornaments now become a sign of the coming judgments of Yahweh, the one true God coming upon the apostasy. And this does indeed prepare the way for the true worship of Yahweh. Zechariah chapter 14 again. After describing the bells of the horses, verse 20 concludes, And the pots in Yahweh's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah shall be holiness unto Yahweh of hosts. And all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and seed therein. In that day there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of Yahweh of hosts. And so our consideration finally returns to the temple of the age to come. But our attention is particularly drawn towards the pots. The original means boiling pots. The pots in which the sacrifices are to be boiled. Which of course will be the food of the priests. Which as we saw earlier would be found paid for out of the wealth of Tyre. Now Ezekiel tells us that the sacrifices would be boiled in the four corner courts, be provided for that purpose. But it's left to Zechariah to describe the boiling pots. And he says they will be like the bowls before the altar. And there is, if we go back to Numbers chapter 7, we are told of these bowls. The same original word is used in this 7th chapter of Numbers. This 7th chapter, we would suggest, is one of the less interesting chapters in Scripture to read. So much repetition is there not. Chapter 7 verse 12. He that offered his offering the first day was Nashon the son of Amminadab of the tribe of Judah. And his offering was one silver charger, the weight thereof was 130 shekels. One silver bowl of 70 shekels after the shekel of the sanctuary. Both of them were full of fine flour mingled with oil for meal offering. One spoon of 10 shekels of gold full of incense. One young bullock, one ram. One lamb of the first year for a burnt offering. One kid of the goats for a sin offering. And for a sacrifice of peace offerings. Two oxen, 5 rams, 5 he-goats, 5 lambs of the first year. This was the offering of Nashon the son of Amminadab. And it's repeated in detail, is it not, throughout the chapter, for every tribe. And then just to make sure that we've understood, at the end of the chapter, the total is given also in detail. And perhaps as we read through this chapter, we may wonder why it is repeated in so much detail. But nothing is in Scripture without a reason. This repetition must be to stress the great importance of this offering, specially dedicated, a freewill offering of the princes of the tribes. these bowls of silver, each of 70 shekels. Silver representing redemption. 70, number always associated with the elders of Israel, to represent then the redemption of Israel. And so, in that final verse of Zechariah, we say, Israel after the flesh, redeemed to be holiness to Yahweh. But we notice, on that occasion, it is holiness to Yahweh of armies. Here the militant title of deity is used. Israel has become holy because the judgments had been poured out by Yahweh through his horsemen. They had driven out the Canaanite, the traders in false doctrine. So now we see Jerusalem, the capital of Yahweh, the throne of his Messiah. All that offends has been purged. All objects that remain thoroughly cleansed and meet for Yahweh's use, and they have become holiness to him. May it be, brethren and sisters, throughout our lives in this day of weakness, we may purge out all that offends, that we may become holiness to Yahweh, part of his government in the age to come.